This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello, this is Positive Parenting, and I'm Armin Brott. You know, it's natural to dismiss dangers that we can't see, and that's exactly what's happened with respect to many devastating infectious diseases. Over the past few decades, our medical system has made tremendous progress against its former greatest adversaries, and as a result of that, very few of us have ever seen one of those infectious diseases that used to be around. Surprisingly, a new malady has arisen that we're now suffering from, and that's a type of amnesia regarding the calamitous effects of those infectious diseases that have happened throughout human history. For example, smallpox has had a tremendously horrible effect way back into the 1500s. Prior to the Spanish conquistadors, it was completely unknown. But after it was introduced, the majority of the indigenous populations were wiped out, and that pretty much led to the collapse of the Aztec and Incan empires. Hundreds of thousands of people died from smallpox every year, but today it's been completely wiped out thanks to vaccinations. Unfortunately, though, a lot of people these days are electing to not vaccinate their kids, and that is causing some real problems, including pockets of disease and death. In this part of today's show, we're going to be talking about the science behind vaccinations and the myths behind vaccinations as well. This is an absolutely critical show for you to listen to if you've got kids or you know anybody who's got kids.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this, from the MrDad.com radio network.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of 326 hands playing Mozart. This is the sound of 10,942 hands showing appreciation. 64 hands building a house for the homeless. 142 hands swimming a triathlon. 18 hands winning the big game. And this is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's incredibly easy and effective. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Dr. Bill Miller, who is a physician, and he's also the author of The Microcosm Within, Evolution and Extinction in the Hollow Genome. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
So I want to talk to you about vaccinations, because this is something that comes up every once in a while. I mean, we have a tendency to think of, I guess, two different things. We think of, okay, we've wiped out smallpox, we've wiped out a whole bunch of stuff, and every time you hear something about a new virus, the Zika virus, for example, was the latest ones, there's talk about let's create a vaccine for that, or HIV. And so I think all of us know potentially what vaccines are all about. And then on the other hand, you hear, I want to harp a little bit on Jenny McCarthy, as the perhaps the popular culture voice of this, but there are people who say, oh, let's look out, vaccines are causing all sorts of problems as well. So hopefully you're going to help us filter through all of that stuff and figure out what's really going on. Give us the basic lay of the land.
The most important thing for us to all remember is that vaccination is arguably the single most important accomplishment of mankind in its consistent struggle for survival. Of all of the threats that we face and have faced throughout our entire human narrative, infectious disease is the most commonplace cause of mortality throughout our history. It is only recently that things have begun to change. People didn't have to worry about cancer because mostly you didn't live long enough to get it.
Yeah, people were living to 30 or 40 or something. Yeah,
exactly. So in the last 300 years or so, we've had the benefits of learning a great deal more about vaccination, and nothing else in history has ever done better things for us. But now, because of this success, it's ironic that there has become there's been the supervention of a form of complacency. Most of the terrible diseases that have afflicted us have been more or less put under control. Let me give you a good example. Let's take measles. If people even think about measles now, they tend to regard it as just, oh, this childhood thing, and it's nothing important. But that's only because it's under such terrific control because of vaccination. In another era, prior to a readily available measles vaccine, it was one of the most deadly diseases in all human history. The amount of mortality from measles was unbelievable. Let me give you a couple of examples. In the Middle Ages, during measles epidemics, there would be villages where 80% of the children, and there are very good records on this, 80% of the children would die within the first few months of life because of measles. Wow. That's how deadly measles has been. Let's just take very quickly the conquistadors, the Spanish and Portuguese conquistadors. When they came across to this new continent, there was an indigenous population that didn't have the same infectious diseases. So the indigenous tribes, they offered some infectious diseases over to the Europeans, but the Europeans brought a collective immunity to some very consequential diseases, typhus, smallpox, and measles. Measles was just as deadly as smallpox and typhus for the indigenous population, the Native Americans. It killed off 90% of them. It wasn't the swords and the spears and the armor of the horses that is the reason the conquistadors triumphed.
Right. We developed vaccines to deal with that, and they've been incredibly successful in pretty much wiping out things like smallpox and keeping measles way under control.
That's correct. But now, because many of the things that have been considered important are rarely seen, there is the tendency to be dismissive and then to get very confused on the basis of social media and rumors, unsubstantiated and, in fact, flatly false rumors, that there are dangers to vaccination which are entirely untrue. Let's go straight to autism.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest ones. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what your listeners are going to be concerned about because that's what they know about. You mentioned Jenny McCarthy. This issue of autism started because there was a report in a very prestigious medical journal in England called The Lancet. This is big-time stuff in England. This is a top-line journal.
Yeah, it's like the journal. It's like JAMA here, basically.
It's the top of the line.
Yeah.
And so there was a report from a respected scientist that appeared to demonstrate a pretty definitive linkage in this article between the MMR vaccine, a particular type of vaccination, and autism. There's only one problem with it. Shockingly, this researcher was proved to have completely committed a scientific fraud. All of the data was made up. It was just insane. And the Lancet then retracted that entire article. There has not been any single article, a scientific article, that has been published to date that shows any definitive link between autism and vaccination.
Well, this guy who wrote the article, Wakefield.
That's exactly right. Andrew
Wakefield,
that's right.
He is kind of unrepentant, though, and has continued to push this idea.
Yes, but you can't. I mean, I understand people have biases. I mean, we all do. But you can't just make stuff up in science. That's what peer review is supposed to correct against, and that's our best defense against ignorance and superstition. The fact that someone's crazy has... It has infected. Interestingly, we're talking about infectious disease. The spread of this rumor is an interesting form of infection. Part of it is good people, really well-meaning, entirely sympathetic people, who make observations and because of anecdote believe that they ought to generalize it. So in medicine, Armin, it's critical to separate out anecdote from good science. For example, you and I, we live our lives, we make associations all the time, But just because we make an observation doesn't mean that it's reproducible, doesn't really mean that it has any scientific basis. I knew a guy who had a such and such a syndrome, and he ate a stalk of celery, and suddenly he was better. I'm making light, but this is how normal people think about things and make normal associations. The problem is, in science, we have to fight that. We have to actually have reproducibility. We have to have actual data. And one of the things with autism that makes it even more complicated is that the incidence of autism has tended to be rising, and there's a very big debate whether we've simply changed the criteria to significantly expand how we define autism, how we even care about it. You know, when I grew up several thousand years ago, kids were autistic, I'm sure, but we just said they were a little odd. It was just, you know, we're talking about a different period of time.
Well, part of it also was that those kids were institutionalized, and so we didn't see them as much as we do now when they're being mainstreamed and they're not taken off and stuck into a closet someplace.
That's right, and there was no video. There was people lived on farms. You know, we're not very far beyond being a nearly entirely rural nation. It's only several generations, and there's no chance. Knowing genetics as I do and things like that, there's no real reason to suspect that autism as a developmental issue should be changing its pattern, particularly in the modern era compared to the past.
Right.
It isn't impossible that such a thing could happen, but there's no actual data to show that that's true. So we have this unusual confluence where the diseases that people feared and knew to be afraid of have now largely disappeared. We don't see them very often, so we tend to dismiss them as being important, and that leads to complacency, and this leads to danger. And I want to talk for a moment about herd immunity and why it's really important to go ahead and be vaccinated. Let's just take influenza, the flu vaccine. I was just talking to someone in Chicago about vaccination, and she was saying she wasn't too sure she was going to have it done. And I said that there are three good reasons to do it. First is that your personal risk, if you are vaccinated, your risk of even getting the flu at all is dropped by, it depends on the season, it depends on the exact formulation of the vaccine and how it matches the type of infection that we have this particular year. But in general, that protection is at the 65 to 70% level.
I'm talking with Bill Miller, who is a physician and also the author of The Microcosm Within, Evolution and Extinction in the Hollow Genome. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Bill and pick up on the rest of the flu incidents going down and the other factors about why you should be getting vaccine, at least for the flu, and we'll talk about more, too. I'm Armin Brandt.
Excuse me, do you know how to get to Maine and Maple?
Do you have these in a 7.5?
How's that cooked?
Can I get that shipped overnight?
Is there a direct flight?
How long does the warranty last?
What's your soup of the day?
How do you change the ringtone?
Does it come in blue?
Does this bus stop at Elm Street?
We ask questions everywhere in life.
Is it raining out?
What time's the meeting?
How much does this cost?
Does it have four-wheel drive?
Have we met before?
What's my account balance?
Yet somehow, when we get to the doctor's office...
Any questions?
No.
We clam up. Ask questions.
What is this test for?
Are there any side effects?
When do I get my results?
Questions lead to better health care. Go to ahrq.gov for a list of 10 questions everyone should know. Questions are the answer. Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I'm 4 years old, and I'm the only one in my whole class that can tie his own shoes.
My mom took me to the circus for my birthday. Half my friends already went, but now I've gone too.
Most kids make fun of me because I still believe in the tooth fairy. But I got $5 yesterday. I believe.
A third of the kids in my eighth grade class drink alcohol regularly.
Over 99% of my class has been offered illegal drugs. Half of my college classmates binge drink, abuse drugs, or do both. But the frequent dinners I had with my family have helped make sure I'm not one of them.
Go to CasaFamilyDay.org. Take the Family Day Pledge and get tips on how to talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol. Have dinner with them often, and you can significantly lower their risk of substance abuse. Dinner makes a difference. A message from the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse at Columbia University.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, talking with Bill Miller, who's a physician and author, and his book is called The Microcosm Within: Evolution and the Extinction in the Hologenome. So you were just talking about the three reasons that people ought to get the flu vaccine, one of them being that your chance of the flu is going to be going down, which is a good thing.
Right.
And you were going to be tying this into herd immunity. And I'll tell you, one of the things that when I have talked to other parents about, who have been doubtful about whether to get a vaccine or not, I guess I take kind of a harsh tone with this, is that, yeah, you don't want to get a vaccine for your kids, that's okay. But keep in mind that they may be saved, their lives may be saved by the fact that my kids have been vaccinated, and they are not going to pass on any sort of disease to your kids.
Absolutely. You just made the most important point. So we talked about your personal protection. If you do get the flu and you've had the flu vaccine, it is true that the intensity of the flu that you get appears to be attenuated. It's less. You'll suffer less than you did if the immunity that you achieved was not absolute. And now the third and perhaps the most consequential part is this issue of the herd immunity, this protection that we confer towards each other by being immunized. It is absolutely true that vaccination carries very tiny risks. The risks are so small that in your decision tree about whether or not to be vaccinated, the decision is absolutely that you should be vaccinated compared to the risk. There are a few people that can't be vaccinated, however. They may have particularly impaired immune systems that prevent them from being vaccinated with the types of vaccines that are produced. Or there are very rare circumstances in the manner in which the vaccine is manufactured may include products, stabilizers, and different things that people have specific unusual allergies to. So there's a tiny percentage of the population that can't have it done. For example, a child undergoing chemotherapy for brain cancer is not going to get a vaccination at certain points during that therapy.
Right.
So if you are vaccinated, what and the rest of the community, a significant percentage of the population is vaccinated, and we're talking about 80% or more to achieve what's termed herd immunity. It means that when enough of the population is vaccinated, the incidence of influenza or some other infectious disease, whichever one we're talking about, is diminished, conspicuously diminished across the entire population because of those people who voluntarily got vaccinated. This is the only means that some of these vulnerable people have to be protected. It is a public service that you do. When you get yourself vaccinated and your children vaccinated, you've done a terrific thing for yourself, and you've also performed a very vital social service.
So just to step back for just a second, you're talking about very tiny risks, and I think that part of what confuses people is, we have a country, 4 million babies are born a year, and so even out of a population that's that big, 4 million, and then we've got hundreds of millions of just general Americans, there's going to be some people who are going to get something or have a bad reaction to something right?
Yes. It is never possible. I've learned in medicine, it is never possible to say anything is riskless. Let's not forget, when you're dealing with tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people being vaccinated, at the time of vaccination, for some small percentage of those people, they're going to get sick for other reasons. And the first thing that we're going to do is take that anecdote and suggest that the overlap, the temporal overlap, the time overlap of the vaccination and this person's other problem, there's got to be a relationship. Well, the fact is that there could be one, and it has to always be vigorously investigated. People's minds have to be open to that possibility. But most of the time, it's something else that went on, and the two incidences happened to overlap. That's anecdote. And so this is the problem that we face when you're dealing with public health, and the numbers and the scale and the scope of it is as great as what we're talking about today. It's really easy for even very, very determined and smart people to get confused. And the problem that we face right now is that the internet is a wonderful thing, but it can also function as the village gossip. I think people have read books or seen movies where there's that one person that goes around the village, a tiny village, and spreads malicious rumors
mm-hmm.
about other good people and
right.
how destructive that can be. Well, the Internet is a force for a terrific advantage and good, but on the margin, it also gives an opportunity for people to say crazy stuff.
Yeah,
and to get really wide circulation.
You know, one of the things I think that people could be taking a look at, I think if they're still skeptical about this, is the hot spots, I guess you would call them, that pop up every once in a while where a community or a small group of people living in a particular neighborhood or a religious organization will all decide that they're not going to get their kids vaccinated. And what happens, I've read a number of these cases, some of them have happened in California and some in other places, where all of a sudden you'll have a whole bunch of kids who have whooping cough, where there's no reason for them to have that, and some
exactly.
of them die. And that's the biggest thing, is that every year kids die because their parents have decided they just don't want to do it.
Absolutely. Whooping cough is a very good example because it's a deadly disease. Whooping cough was a source of significant morbidity and mortality. You can cough so hard with whooping cough as an adult or a child, or you break blood, you break ribs, or you burst blood vessels in your eyeball. I'm not making this stuff up. This is a critically serious disease, and people tend to get complacent that it's just like words from the past. You know, in the 1930s, they had whooping cough. No, we have whooping cough today, and at a certain rate, dozen or so will die every year because of it. It could be prevented. One other interesting facet in talking about the association between diseases and other things. We all tend to misunderstand random. There's a tendency for all of us to assume randomness means evenness. So, for example, we'd say, well, there's a cluster of leukemia in XX town in New Jersey, and everybody immediately rushes to think it's the water. Well, of course, a good scientist would say, well, let's look at that. Let's be careful that that's not the case. But the biggest thing that happens is sometimes things just do cluster. Randomly, things can occur in multiples.
I heard some scientists explain this to me once. If you look at something and the data is absolutely perfectly laid out so that it's completely consistent throughout the entire population, that's in many ways a sign that something's wrong.
That's been skewed.
Yeah.
Well, you can. Well, the thing, and we can't go into it, but there's things called curve fitting, where you adjust your sample size. You do all sorts of things to make the curves look right, and that's one of the things you have to be very careful about. That's why the concept of peer review, where you have people with competing ideas judging and looking something over, is an important part of the process. It keeps it honest.
Talk just for a minute. We only have a couple minutes left, but quickly about the vaccine for HPV. What do you think about that? That's another one that's getting a lot of controversy these days.
It's a huge advance. Again, this is an opportunity to prevent very significant long-term out, especially in cervical cancer incidences going forward. It is certainly something that I would encourage everyone to consider having, every woman having.
Well, boys as well.
Well, yes, because it could be transmitted through same-sex relationships and of course, through heterosexual relationships too.
People are finding basically the same kinds of problems with the HPV vaccine. They're saying, oh, my child was vaccinated and came down with something. And there is a little bit of a movement against that now.
Well, in all steps forward, you have some counter motion against it. That's our human nature, and it will always be so. I don't know of anything that has ever had in medicine that has had a smooth introduction. We don't have much time, but I will say that the introduction of the actual current modern format of vaccination took centuries to accomplish, spreading, coming into favor and then disfavor, and finally with Edward Jenner in England in the 1700s,
mm-hmm.
Proving that the importance of vaccination at that time. But it was fought bitterly,
yeah.
And people were insistent And so I'm not surprised that there are people pushing back against it and making associations based on anecdote.
Bill Miller is the author of The Microcosm Within, Evolution and Extinction in the Hollow Genomes, also an expert on vaccinations and a physician. Thanks again, Bill.
Thank you. I appreciate being on the show.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screenings. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ, good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. It's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and it's time for a Parents at Play segment. So, school is well underway, and hopefully you've loaded up on markers and pencils and protractors and other school supplies, but what if you underestimated how much stuff your child has to lug to school and just realized that she needs a bigger backpack? And what if your printer is getting low on ink and you just about passed out when you saw how much those new cartridges cost? Not to worry. We have got some solutions for you right here. Backpacks and rucksacks from Sydney Page. Sydney Page makes backpacks that are so snazzy that you might be tempted to go back to school yourself just so you can show off. They come in a variety of sizes, so there's definitely something for toddlers, adults, and everyone in between. The quality and materials are good, the patterns are attractive and blissfully free of licensed images from movies and TV shows, they're roomy, and they have plenty of pockets. There's also a nice social consciousness factor here. For every backpack sold, the company donates an exact matching bag to a child in need. They even fill the pack with school supplies. Prices range from about $40 to $90. They're available at a lot of online retailers and at sydneypage.com. Backpacks and more from Bixby. If you've got a child in pre-K or kindergarten, you'll love these backpacks, which go way, way beyond cute fabric patterns. The elephant backpack actually has a trunk, and the rocket ship and airplane packs have wings. Other styles include monkey, cat, fox, and butterfly. For older kids, there are plenty of patterns, including zombie camo and solid colors. Bixby's are sturdy, they're PVC, BPA, and phthalate-free, and lead-free as well, and have plenty of pockets for your child's ever-growing menagerie of belongings. You can also get matching or complimentary lunch boxes. Products range from $20 to $60 at retailers everywhere or Bixby.com. The Expression ET2550 EcoTank All-in-One Printer from Epson. Like many of Epson's other printers, this one allows you to print, copy, and scan, and it features built-in wireless so you can print from your computer, phone, or tablet, which means that your kids will be able to print their last-minute assignments without having to get out of bed. For pictures, there's a card slot, so you go straight from your camera to the printer without the extra step of having to copy it to your computer first. But what makes the ET2550 really stand out is the Eco Tank, which comes loaded with enough ink to print 4,000 black and white pages and 6,500 color pages. For most of us, that's enough for about 2 years. This printer may be a bit more expensive than others with comparable features, but you'll more than make up for the difference in ink savings. Replacement ink, it's about $12.50 for the black and $50 for the full set of four colors, will cover you for another 2 years. But your current printer would need about 20 cartridges to match the ET2550's output, and at $15 to $50 a pop, you can do the math. The printer is under $300, available online, in stores, or at Epson.com. You can get reviews of a lot more products and games and all sorts of wonderful stuff for parents and kids to be doing together at parentsatplay.com. We'll be back next week with another segment for you. Until then, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.